The Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Ms. Cheryl, please call the roll. Here.
Vice Chair Mainey.
Here.
Representatives Casello.
Here.
Grieco.
Here.
Hawkins.
Here.
Maygard, excused. Mariana.
Here.
McCurdy.
Here.
Nixon.
Present.
Rizzo.
Here.
Rodriguez.
Present.
Choaf.
Here.
Ranking Member Thompson.
Here.
Tuck.
Here.
Zika.
Present.
You have a quorum, Mr. Chair.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone back to the Higher Education Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Good afternoon, members, and welcome back. First, I'd like to thank Chair Mariano for her service as our vice chair. I want to make an announcement that for this year, we have a new vice chair, and I want to congratulate Representative Mainey on his appointment as the new vice chair. And Representative Mainey, if you'd like to say a couple words, you have the floor. If you do not, that is quite all right.
Let's stay on track.
Okay, thank you.
I'm happy to be here.
And I'm looking forward to working together as we move forward with this budget. So I'm excited about that, Representative Mainey. I'm also pleased to announce that Ranking Member Thompson is returning as our ranking member. I couldn't say enough about Ranking Member Thompson, the time she has spent in the legislature, her commitment to higher education, both professionally and as a legislator. So again, this year, I'm honored to work with you, Ranking Member Thompson. And if you'd like to say a couple words, you may do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we have a wonderful opportunity to continue to place higher education in the state of Florida at the highest level. And I'm just excited to be working with the committee again. Thank you.
Thank you, Ranking Member. I also want to introduce and announce that we are welcoming a new representative to this committee that wasn't with us last year, and that's Representative Casello. Representative Casello, would you like to make any comments?
Thank you, Chair. It's just good to be here and working on Representative Thompson's words, getting up there with the higher education, improving it in Florida. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I also want to note that Representative Maggard is new to this committee as well, but he is not with us today. We wish him well, and we're excited to see him when he returns. Members, today we will hear two presentations. Both the Department of Education and the Board of Governors will be presenting their legislative budget requests, or their LBRs. First, we will have Susan Pridgen, Deputy Commissioner of Finance and Operations at the Department of Education, who will present the Department of Education's request first. Ms. Pridgen, you are recognized.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to provide this overview of the Department of Education's higher education budget request, legislative budget request. The slide in front of you shows the 21-22 appropriations compared to the department's 22-23 LBR amounts by budget category. And these are the categories of which you will have influence on as well. For the Florida colleges, we are requesting funding of $1.36 billion. This budget request is to maintain investments into the college program funding of $1.3 billion, $25 million in performance funding, and $14 million for students earning industry certifications in high-skill, high-demand areas at Florida colleges. This budget is also requesting to restore the funds for the Open Door Grant Program, $20 million in the colleges and $15 million in tech centers that are currently funded from the GEAR funds. And for career and adult education, we are requesting funding at $529 million. This budget requests to maintain the $372 million in workforce funding, and similar to the colleges, $6.5 million for students earning industry certifications in those high-skill, high-demand areas at career tech centers. For vocational rehabilitation and blind services, we are requesting to maintain the base funding for each of these programs. For VR's funding of $237 million, these funds will help provide employment opportunities to approximately 72,000 Floridians with physical or mental disabilities around the state, including students with disabilities. For blind services, funding of $57 million. These funds will provide opportunities to approximately 12,000 Floridians in programs and services such as the Blind Babies and Children's Programs, the Braille and Talking Book Library, services, and blind vendors in food service operations. Student financial aid is funded at $962 million. Where there was growth in the programs as identified through an estimating conference, it was picked up by the department. And this is the final slide of our presentation. As you can see, we're requesting approximately $55 million over the base budget of this year, which does not include non-recurring funds. Again, these are the categories of which you will have influence as we work through committee weeks and through session, in which you will decide the best use of all these funds, plus more, possibly. So this concludes the department's presentation.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions? Thank you for your presentation. Next, we'll have Marshall Kreiser, Chancellor of the State University System, who will present the Boggs LBR. And before you're recognized, Chancellor, I want to take this opportunity to wish you a happy birthday. You are recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the well wishes. It's every one of them's a good one that you get to. Members, it's a pleasure to be in front of you this afternoon, and I thank you for taking the time. I would like to spend a little bit of time talking about our State University System budget request this year, and then any other information that I can provide to you. I did want to take my couple of seconds at the front end and you a little bit of background, particularly those who are looking at the State University System budget for the first time, let you know that thank you for the investment that this legislature and our governor have made in higher education in our state. As a result of the work and the work that our universities have been able to do with the funds that you've invested in our students, we are still able to claim that Florida is ranked by U.S. News and World Report as the number one state in post-secondary education. It's an honor that we share with our college system, but it's one that's felt across all 12 of our institutions and really reflects the fact that you aren't investing in institutions or agencies, you're investing in students. We have over 430,000 students now in our system. We produce 97,000 degrees each year, and we are still ranked as number two in tuition. That's a good place to be. Usually I want to talk about how highly we're ranked, but we're the second lowest tuition in the country. It is rare when you're able to be affordable and focus on quality, and it's because of what this legislature and our governor have done that we've been able to deliver on those results. I also wanted not just talk about the system for a minute, but wanted you to know that we are now one in three states that have at least one institution in the top five, the top 20, and the top 50 of public universities. We have five institutions in the top 100. We also have the top public horse historically black college and university in Florida A&M University. And we have the number five public liberal arts institution as a part of Florida's system. And so we have been able to see results delivered to our students and delivered to our state. Rankings, I will never say they're not important because I kind of am proud of that number one ranking we have. But I'll say the reason we have the rankings we have is because we've been focused on student outcomes. We've been focused on retaining our students, graduating our students, working with our students to find careers and find the jobs that Florida needs them to fill. And as a result of that, I think it's reflected in these rankings. But it's not because of these rankings that we do what we're doing. Also, just as information, wanted to provide for you a little bit of background in terms of the funding that our state has provided. The slide here is different than you may see from some of the other education center sectors because this legislature, and I'll come back to a specific item on this later, but I wanted to spend a moment and talk about tuition spending authority. This does not reflect increases in tuition. This is a number derived from our current tuition times the number of students that actually would be paying that tuition. And so the legislature has chosen to also track us and require approval for our tuition spending authority. That's represented in the blue line. I'm going to come back on a couple of universities that we need to talk to you about increasing their spending authority, not increasing their tuition. And I talked a little bit about being number, I guess this is number two in the right direction, but I wanted you to have a sense. Not only is it important to know where we rank, but to understand what the delta is between Florida and even the average within the United States. And one of the important reasons about this for me is there is a national conversation that I imagine you've heard somewhere along the line about the high cost of higher education. And yet, to me, the Florida story is entirely different, and it's because our elected officials have invested in our students that we're able to maintain that. Also, another way of looking at this, because I've talked a lot about the focus on students, is to understand how much of the cost of education, of our students' education, is covered by a series of federal grants, such as the Pell Program, other areas like the Bright Futures Scholarship Program, scholarships that our institutions themselves provide to our students in part of our performance funding metrics, which I'll talk about in a little bit in just a minute, actually emphasizes reducing the cost to our students, not only by investing in them, not just state dollars, but also institution dollars, but also in focusing on reducing the number of hours. Kind of seems like a simple equation, but it sometimes is complicated, is understanding, and we track, the average number of hours it takes a student to complete a 120-hour degree. So effectively, if you're having to take more courses, then you need to graduate. And there's reasons why that may happen. Excuse me. We want to emphasize that efficiency is also a part of how we deliver education, because a big emphasis within our system has been to actually work down the number of hours so that a student can complete their degree in the time it should take to get the degree. And in many cases, kind of work this down to a level that, if you think about it, time has expense. And this is one of the ways we understand that by focusing on a 4-year graduation rate and getting close to delivering on that goal is something that has a dramatic impact on affordability in our state. This is another conversation you may have heard of nationally, but I wanted to emphasize it here, and that's the high amount of student debt. I actually saw a magazine periodical last week that once again had an article about where student debt was going in our country. In Florida, compared to the national headline, we have now increased the number of our students, and each of these lines is a data year. It's students enrolled in a year. We have now taken our percent without loans at all to 70% of Florida students. At the same time, we've been able to reduce the amount of average loan to the students who do have debt. This was something I was proud about back in 2015, 2016, to be able to say that we had more students without loans than not. But now we're quickly approaching a point where we're talking about a significant majority of our students being able to go to college and not have debt. So that was a little bit of the setup, I suppose, for wanting to talk to you about what we're asking for. We have organized our budget presentation to you all around three areas that my board has characterized as pillars of excellence: performance-based funding, preeminence or national ranking funding, and a relatively new construct called universities of distinction. And I'll spend a little bit of time talking about each of these. First, in the area of performance funding, I would argue strenuously that it's worked. The change to performance funding from enrollment funding that our state went through in around 2013 has led to increasing the number of our students who are able to graduate in 4 years, because we measure it. And we measure it based on, in all of these metrics, we measure both excellence, and we measure improvement. So we award or reward universities that either excel in a metric or actually are making improvement toward getting to the benchmarks for a metric. And in Florida, what we see is more of our students today graduate in 4 years than they were before. I talked a little bit about student costs coming down, and we've seen a significant decrease in that. At the same time, we have had tremendous success in moving our students in a category called programs of strategic emphasis, more toward degrees that meet the employer demand in our state. We do this through a gap analysis as well as some other categories that we measure, but we are looking at how we close the gaps between degree production and what Florida employers are looking for employees. I would make one point with programs of strategic emphasis. It's not our only important degrees. I would describe it this way as these are, for example, in our gap analysis, these are the degrees where there is 100 or more job openings than we produce degrees. If yours 80, we're not there, we're not focused on that one yet. We are still focused on producing those degrees, but I think one thing I want you to understand is these aren't our only important degrees. And since that I know that a couple of you may have an I-4 background, I wanted an example I would share with you, for example, in the hospitality industry, which is important not only to I-4, but it's important to all parts of our state. The only degree program and programs of strategic emphasis in hospitality is hospitality marketing. And that's because we produce 100 or more fewer degrees a year than our employers are looking for. But there is other forms of hospitality degrees that are critically important to our employers. And the way I look at it is if we stopped producing those, at some point they're going to end up on this list because they'll have a gap. And so we try to balance all of it, but a lot of our focus has also been trying to understand how we meet the Florida economy today and in the future, how we match what our employers tell us they need in the employees, in the students that they're going to hire, and work our way to getting there in the right direction. Partly as a result of our focus on degrees has also led to the fact that we see that the average income of our students 1 year after they graduate has significantly increased over the last 7 years. Some of that's because we've improved the mix and we're more aligned with what our employers are asking for, and we're more aligned with some of the top paying areas in our economy, things like STEM degrees. But also because we've gone from saying that when they graduate, we really aren't accountable for what a student does, to understand because we measure it, we are accountable for it, and we're tracking it so that we understand how well we match our students up with the careers they have once they graduate. This is a chart. Thank you, Mr. Chair, that I understand this might have been that I might have missed this time otherwise. I talked a little bit about improvement and excellence when I was talking about performance funding. But back in 2014, I started an exercise that for a while, actually for a few years, sat in a drawer in my desk. And each year at the end of our performance funding scoring, I went through, instead of looking at both improvement and excellence, I just took excellence scores. And I tried to understand, are we meeting our benchmarks? Are we close to our benchmarks? Are we missing our benchmarks? And I came up with the not too original color scheme of red, yellow, and green to reflect that. But I wanted, and it gave me something that each year as I added a page to that file, I was able to understand, are we doing the right thing for Florida? So what I would like to share with you is this is what we look like after the eighth year. And it shows and I would also note in this, which is why this is also helpful to us, is I remind myself, in legislation, we modified 9B, the metric 9, basically, on this chart, which would be reflected by 9A and 9B. You all gave us some new standards that you wanted us to have included in that metric. So what it shows us is that modification is an area that we're going to have to focus on. I don't want to downplay the amount of green I think that I see now, but we constantly are raising the bar to make sure that we're continuously improving on our student outcomes. The budget ask around performance-based funding, I think the most important part of this, frankly, is to ask you to consider restoring recurring funds for performance-based funding. This was a decision that had to be made earlier this last session as a result of the state economy and the balance that we had in budget dollars that were available. But we're asking that you restore these funds, $265 million, to the recurring fund source size. I know that's an issue that you all have to deal with, other appropriations committees have to deal with. I just respectfully ask you to keep that in your, it would be on my wish list, and I hope it's at least on your consideration list. We have also asked for an increase of $15 million. Largely, this recognizes that in the past year, Florida Polytechnic University joined the pool. We used to have 11 universities eligible for this funding. We now have 12. Florida Poly had grown to the point in their operations and had enough years of track record to be eligible for performance funds, and that would reflect that addition without a penalty to other universities as a result of it. One point I would also pause on and have you understand in the box below this. Again, this is an investment from performance funding that when we track where the dollars have been spent, this is not going to an institution. This is going to people. This is going to career centers. This is going to not only faculty, but individuals who support faculty, teaching assistants, graduate assistants, adjuncts, and also people who support our research initiatives. And it's kind of an interesting dichotomy to me that in education, we sort of talk about faculty and everybody else. But there are a lot of customer, what I would think of as customer-facing employees at our universities who deal directly with students, deal directly with stakeholders, who are not what you would traditionally think of as staff when you hear kind of a line in staff division. But what we look at very carefully is to make sure that we're investing in all the aspects that lead to student success. Move on to the preeminent state universities, and I know that you've heard either locally or hopefully on a statewide basis that we've been bragging a lot in the last week or so. University of Florida has now risen to number five, rose up 9 spots to achieve that. But also Florida State University holds the ranking at number 19, and USF is ranked 46th. Based on a statutory construct that the legislature created in the past called preeminence funding, there are 12 metrics that are measured and accounted for each year to identify our preeminent state universities. There are two principles that have been very important to that. One is it tends to trend more to recognize some of their stature in terms of national ranking in areas like research and development, which, by the way, results in dollars coming to Florida in form of grants, particularly from the federal government and from private sources, but also was originally designed where the legislature would award a pool of money, a pot of money to preeminence, and then that would be divided equally between the preeminent universities. And I think that's another... I think, frankly, what that accomplished in the beginning and can still accomplish for them is it leaves our top-ranked universities working together around the construct of preeminence and funding for it rather than working against each other, and hopefully that leads us to a more constructive outcome. In the area of preeminence, we're asking for a total of $150 million to be divided equally. I think what I would stress, they would like me to tell you that $150 million is really important, and I get that. I also recognize you have to balance a budget again. I think what's important is as you think about this, considering whatever that dollar amount is, an equal division is an important part of how we continue to invest in our top-ranked universities. And then finally, I wanted to talk about universities of distinction. This rose from some of the original preeminence statute, which recognized that the Board of Governors could develop another construct to recognize and reward universities of high achievement. The construct of universities of distinction is that each of the other nine universities identified an area that they were good at, where they believed that incremental investment would lead them to be great. And greatness in the terms of attracting the top students, attracting the top faculty, attracting the top research dollars, so that we could make a credible claim of excellence across all 12 of our universities. We divided those into three categories as we began the consideration of healthcare, a high-tech economy, and investing in Florida's future. And then the universities themselves identified not only the area, but the specific project where they believed they could excel. You all have invested in universities of distinction at some level in the past, but what we're asking for this year is that we have pulled together, excuse me, I jumped off the slide too soon. We pulled together all of the university asks, effectively presenting it to you. We respect, I think if I haven't said it enough times yet, I'll say we respect the fact at the end of the day, you've got to make these decisions. But we wanted to understand, wanted you all to understand what those projects are, what the dollars are involved in each one of them, and rather than trying to parse this down at the Board of Governors level, really present the legislature with a full amount of what achieving those goals would require. And then another important construct, two projects that came before the board that I think are worth special mention. You may not recall a time in 2014 when there was discussion in the legislature of splitting the Florida A&M and FSU College of Engineering. It is the only joint college in our system. It was created when the, you know, and in part it recognizes the fact that you have two major universities located in the same town and that you have an opportunity to leverage the ability to recruit students, both diverse students, as well as to become more diverse based on the gender of students between the two universities. And you've paired an HBCU with a nationally ranked preeminent university. In doing that, part of the discipline of that construct was to create a separate line item in the budget. It allowed the dollars appropriated to this College of Engineering to be used only for the College of Engineering. I would share the universities, FAMU and FSU, have both contributed above and beyond that. But we recognize the fact that this stands alone in some respects, and we thought it was important to recognize the gains that we believe Florida can make in developing STEM graduates who are in high demand among employers. And it's been a very successful effort since then to build to that. They've reached a point, we've actually had this request for a couple of cycles before, but honestly, we've really reached a point where they've outgrown the budget that they have. And in order to really have the impact on Florida and on our country that they can have, we believe an investment in the College of Engineering is appropriate. And then we've also added an item where the University of Florida, in looking at the interest in fintech around our state, is looking at how we create sort of a multidisciplinary approach that we really kind of get ahead of the fintech opportunities that we have in our state. And it also reflects what we hear Florida employers telling us that they need more of in terms of, you know, it's a new area. It's also an area that a lot of our companies in the state are trying to figure out how they play in it, and they're trying to figure out where they find the employees who can help lead them in making that transition. And then my favorite slide, mainly because it's close to the end of my presentation. But there are a number of items that we do present to you each year. Very quickly, at the University of Florida, they have IFAS, which has an extension mission and requirement throughout the state of Florida. There's a formula that was developed based on their actual work activity by the Board of Governors several years ago, and we put in a budget ask for the UF IFAS workload initiative. I am required to ask you for money. Tim, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to say this in public, but I am required to ask you for money for the state fire marshal, or else they're going to send me a bill. I think they'll probably send me one anyway now. But we're trying to comply with that rule. We have the Johnson Scholarship, which has been targeted at need-based scholarships for students with disabilities. It's been an incredibly impactful initiative. The Johnson Foundation matches the state dollars that go into that. And then I set this up at the beginning, so I'll circle back to it. We need to ask you for additional budget authority, not a tuition increase, but additional budget authority for Florida Gulf Coast University in the amount of $2.1 million and the University of Central Florida in the amount of $13.7 million to allow the expenditure of tuition revenue collected from increased student credit hours. What happens if you don't do that is the tuition still would be collected, but the dollars would revert to the carry forward balance of the university rather than being expended in the current year towards the education of our students. And for those who are hearing about carry forward for the first time, I won't try to go through that today, but I'd be happy to talk to you about it more. And this is just a summary slide to walk through the items that I discussed. And Mr. Chair, I appreciate the time in front of the committee.
Thank you, Chancellor. Members, are there any questions for the Chancellor? Chair Mariano, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good to see you again. Just a quick question on the College of Engineering ask for FSU, FAMU, and Florida. Why specifically those institutions as opposed to asking for either all of the institutions or additional institutions that are located in other cities?
It's the structure, it's kind of the byproduct of a structure we created when there was a decision, and I would say the decision was made ultimately by both the leadership of Florida A&M and FSU to continue to have a joint college. But at the time we did that, we needed to implement sort of the fiscal accountability of having a separate line item in the state budget. It's the only college that has its own line item in the state budget. And so as a result of that, it is not ignored by the universities. As I said, each of them have made contributions in excess of the state appropriation, but it's not going to rise to your attention through the normal process of a board of trustees, a single board of trustees coming to the Board of Governors and making a proposal around engineering. So I believe that this is the place where their budget is considered rather than around a single president's table or a single board of trustees meeting in order to consider what their budget needs to be and what their accomplishments are.
Just follow up. I understand the unique nature of the FSU FAMU, as you mentioned, but specifically for Florida, then why was Florida chosen to request the $10 million for their College of Engineering over another institution?
The $10 million from UF was from FinTech. And it was, we receive all of the LBRs from all of the institutions, and then we take before our board what those requests are. And this was the area that the board saw a potential initiative to build and really focus on FinTech.
Okay. Representative McCurdy, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
I believe it was slide 23 that referenced the Board of Governors requesting $280 million in the performance-based funding.
Yes, sir. Do you want me to go back to that or just?
Yeah, just for your reference. Performance-based funding historically for schools like FAMU, UNF, New College, those schools that have fell short on those certain metrics, that are, as they're currently established, has the board adopted or plan to revise those metrics for PBC funding for those schools?
I'm sorry, I'm still clicking. Mr. Chair, you're right if I...
Chair, of course.
We actually revised So I got lost somewhere along the way, and I apologize on my slides. I'll just, actually, a couple of years ago, the original construct of performance-based funding was an idea called the bottom three, which meant that regardless of what the rankings were, whoever was in the bottom three did not receive any performance funding. That was revised a few years ago, recognizing that the cluster of universities was across all 12, that the 12 universities were coming into a tighter cluster around results. In the beginning, the difference between the bottom three scores and, let's say, the middle three scores was demonstrative. Whereas now we have made the progress where that cluster was tighter around the universities and starting to try to distinguish, you know, if I sort of hypothetically threw out that if you're trying to distinguish between an 85 and an 84, and think of that, you know, as like a grade point average, you start getting very, you know, it's hard to say someone deserves money and someone else doesn't. And that's why that was revisited. I believe actually language, it was language actually introduced by the House into the statute a few years ago. And as a result of that, we have a different, what I'd call backsliding protection as long as universities keep their scores above 70 points. So that people don't disregard it, but it is now possible for every university to share in that. And then I would just add, I could get more detail for you. Over time, the legislature has funded other initiatives, including at FAMU, based on the demonstration of need that the university's made.
One follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a quick follow-up. So the PBC funding that we're speaking about right now is currently not recurring funding, and we're asking for it to be recurring funding.
Until this past budget, this current year's budget, that was recurring funding that had increased over time. Given the budget balancing process this past session, that was funded with non-recurring dollars. The challenge that presents on a temporary basis, that doesn't present a challenge, but the challenge it presents going forward is a lot of those dollars, for example, are invested in hiring faculty or hiring counselors, hiring people. Well, salaries are recurring expenses. And so if we are going forward limited to non-recurring dollars, you tend to start making short-term decisions rather than long-view decisions. And we believe it creates the proper incentive for going forward.
Members, any other questions? Thank you, Chancellor.
Thank you, sir.
Members, before we conclude this committee, I just want to make a couple of comments. First, I just want to commend both the Department of Education and the Board of Governors and their staff for their presentations and for the work they do. I think we're fortunate in our state, and we see with the results, our state university system isn't number one in the nation solely because of what the universities do. It's mainly because of what the universities do, but there are a lot of people that work behind the scenes, both at the department, the Board of Governors, our governor, and the legislature over the years that have invested in the results that we're seeing right now. So I just want to commend them publicly because they do a phenomenal job. Another thing I want to suggest, and I did this last year, is take this time, especially early on in committee weeks, to visit your public and private universities and colleges in your district. I think it's important for you to engage with them to see what their needs are and to provide feedback to us during this process of creating this budget on what the needs are in your various and diverse districts. So hopefully you'll take me up on that offer, and if you'd like me to join you, let me know, and I'd love to join you on some of the tours of your facilities as well, of your institutions. This concludes our committee agenda. Is there any further business from the committee? Seeing none, Chair Mariano moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned.